Okay.
Bring it back. I got to say something. That's me. I'm on the air. We're producing on the air. Hey, there's a John A. McDonald birthday party, and apparently our Quebec brothers and sisters weren't invited because they're not writing about him. The Anglosphere is full of discussion about, is he a hero, not a hero? Well, you know, pity the country that needs a hero, says Emerson. I want to add a detail so that in the Anglosphere, while we talk about John A., we get an important detail straight. They're talking about, is he the father of the country, and should we celebrate, etc. I think he's the father of our national migraine. And if you're going to talk, the issue has been, John A. definitely was a racist, everybody says, but then the cover for that is, oh, well, everybody was a racist, so it's okay. But these were, there was two particular people that with whom there was a problem, and that is the Métis people and the Native people of North America. And in 1885, John A. had to make a decision. Louis Riel, who together with Poundmaker and Big Bear had organized a rebellion because people were starving in the West and in Saskatchewan, the federal government did not care, the central government did not care, or certainly wasn't responding to the pleas of the people. So the people had gone and asked Louis Riel to help them as a symbol of their unity to demand things of the McDonald's government so that they could feed themselves and also have treaties to be respected and they could live. Well, instead, it turned into a violent encounter, and the uprising was defeated, and Louis Riel was arrested, and he was charged with treason, and in 5 days, a jury convicted him. The jury recommended that he be given mercy, and the judge said he'd be sentenced to death. And then it went to the leadership of the country, that's John A., and they said, what are we going to do with John A.? And Montreal said, please do not hang him. He's a French man, he is a Métis, he has legitimate demands, it's unfortunate all this happened, don't hang him. And they turned out by the thousands in Quebec City, Montreal, leaders of the Catholic Church, leaders of the political population, called for for him to be given mercy. And John A. said, and I have the quote, he shall die though every dog in Quebec barks in his favor. And then they hanged him. So Toronto got its way, and Riel was hanged. And we're leaving out, and remember, when people talk about, rightly they do, they say, well, you know, he starved the native population. He knew they were starving, and he wanted to have his railroad, etc. But they had a champion, all of them. They got together, Poundmaker, Big Bear, and Louis Riel. So what happened as a result of the hanging was that the national perspective of the people of Quebec was underlined. And so that's what we have. If you want to celebrate his birthday, go right ahead. But do remember that, in fact, the central problem of the Canadian identity from day one has been the three-part issue of French, English, and Native. And on the question of the French, he told them, no, you don't have a veto over my execution of Mr. Riel. And even though, and I'm going to kill him, whether every dog in Quebec barks. They executed him on the 18th of September, 1885, and the rest is what we're living with. Well, we're joining now by a co-producer, David Jacobs, who is busy directing affairs here. And I wish I knew what was going on.
David's made the studio look like a lawyer's office.
Yes, it's turned into a lawyer's office. And, well, David, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Nice to be here.
We want to talk about all the multiple questions that flow from the heinous attack on the cartoonists at Hebdo, Charlie Hebdo, followed by a lot of really political tumult, and ending yesterday, well, not ending, but sort of accentuated yesterday by this demonstration in Paris, where the United States and Canada were underrepresented. That's a matter we might talk about. But you and I have been talking back and forth, and there's a heavy email traffic, and Phil, of course, you're going to join in. What I've been struck by is how many brilliant essays have been written. And it's very impressive. A lot of very thoughtful people have come through with material. And you've been trafficking. So I'm going to ask you to highlight some of what you've been seeing and what you're impressed with.
Oh, yeah. I figured what you wanted me to do is kind of curate some of the articles that I've been...
Curate,
yeah. Be a librarian here and tell people what I think, anyway, what I recommend. I was trying to group the articles I was thinking about under themes. It's very difficult to do so. But there have been some, as you say, brilliant articles written that you can find on the internet. One of the themes... which is explored by a few, is, okay, it's one thing to say we are for freedom of speech, and it's not a good thing for journalists or cartoonists, however vile the stuff that they print, is to be killed for it. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's childish and immature to say that freedom of speech is an absolute everywhere and that everyone should just publish anything. For example, a lot of people are saying, well, how come the Globe and Mail and the London Times and so on aren't publishing all the cartoons from Charlie Hebdo? Mm-hmm. And then there's this other reaction which says, well, since the journalists at Charlie Hebdo were killed, we should unanimously applaud what they've written. So all of those things are sort of have been torn apart as ideas on the internet. And let me just go to the first article, which I think is a terrific article by a philosopher at Oxford University, Brian Klug, who should be well known to people in Canada. He's actually been here. He was one of the founders of a British organization called Independent Jewish Voices, which caters to those people.
His name is K-L-U-G.
K-L-U-G. And you can find it you can find it on the internet if you just look for the moral hysteria of Je Suis Charlie. And he does something very interesting. He says, well, you know, are we really in favor of that degree of freedom of speech? And do the cartoonists of Charlie Hebdo, do they lampoon themselves? Because we say, okay, they lampoon Muslims, and no subject is beyond lampooning. So let me read something controversial that he says, but it's obvious if you think about it. So he says, here's a thought experiment. Suppose that while the demonstrators stood solemnly at the Place de la République the other night, holding up their pens and wearing their Je Suis Charlie badges, a man stepped out in front, brandishing a water pistol and wearing a badge that says Je Suis Sherif, the first name of one of the two brothers that gunned down the Charlie Hebdo staff. Suppose he was carrying a placard with a cartoon depicting the editor of the magazine lying in a pool of blood, saying, well, I'll be a son of a gun, or you've really blown me away, or some such witticism. How would the crowd have reacted? Would they have laughed? Would they have applauded this gesture as quintessentially French? Would they have hailed this lone individual as a hero standing up for liberty or freedom of speech? Or would they have been profoundly offended and infuriated? Many of them would have denounced the offender, et cetera, et cetera. So he's saying masses of people have turned the victims of a horrific assassination, which the staff of the magazine truly are, into heroes of France and freedom of speech. The point of the thought experiment is not to show that such people are hypocrites, rather it's to show they don't know their own minds. They're committed to the proposition there are no limits to freedom of expression, no subject so sensitive, no symbol so sacrosanct, they can't be sent up, sneered at, and parodied. And He says, but that's not what people actually think.
Not at all.
And they don't know it.
No, and Mr. Murdoch could be an example. He's pushed it over, and actually in the National Post, I'm seeing it. They want to turn this into, let's get the Muslims, let us promote Christianity against the Muslims. Now, A.K. Rowling, is that how you spell Rowling?
J.K. Rowling.
J.K.
Yeah.
I got the wrong, I was talking about John A., so I got my
A's. The author of the Harry Potter books, right?
Yes, author of Harry Potter. She had a nice comment, an interesting one. I think you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, Murdoch's tweet that he tweeted was that Muslims, maybe most Muslims are peaceful, but until they recognize and destroy the jihadist cancer, they must be held responsible. So J.K. Rowling tweeted, I was born Christian. If that makes Rupert Murdoch my responsibility, I'll auto-excommunicate. And then she followed that up by saying, the Spanish Inquisition was my fault, as is all Christian fundamentalist violence. Oh, and Jim Baker.
Well, I'm going to join in and the Crusades, and I have to apologize.
Yeah, that's right. So that's a great article. So following up on that theme, this is something you have to Google to find. There's a rather nice short debate on Britain's Channel 4 between Martin Rowson, who's a columnist, cartoonist, and Will Self, who's a philosopher, writer, science fiction writer, fascinating man, humorist, about is there absolute freedom of speech? Where Will Self makes a terrific point that people who believe in free speech as an absolute are no less irrational than people who believe in fundamentalist religion. It's a mm-hmm. faith, and it can't be real. And again, go back to the almost always reliable, maybe always reliable, Glenn Greenwald, who's written a
close to being reliable.
Yeah, who's written something? He has a blog called The Intercept. Something called In Solidarity with a Free Press: Some More Blasphemous Cartoons.
Oh, yes. Now, talk about that. What did he – I understand he really – there's a storm because he actually produced the cartoons, and everybody said, oh, don't do that.
Well, he produced the cartoons, and so did somebody, by the way, called Jacob Canfield, who you can find also on the internet, wrote, a brilliantly terrific piece where he shows the cartoons. I mean, I was actually reluctant to reprint this for my friends because the actual cartoons from Charlie Hebdo are really – not funny and disgusting, both. I mean, there's a cartoon of Muhammad on all fours showing his genitals with, I don't know how to describe this, but a star over his anus. And the French, if I can remember it, is l'étoile est née, a star is born. What's funny about that? It's just scatological.
That's what you call provocation, right? In other words, it's like people at a soccer match calling each other dirty names to see if a brawl will break out. And it comes under this rubric of what people think that it's defensible. But in fact, we have laws. We have hate laws. And the Globe, as they point out. I saw, by the way, I recommend people go. The Globe explains itself. It said, when those cartoons originally came out and were talked about, they said, we didn't reprint them because we don't agree with them. We don't mind talking about them. We're not going to be the ones to be the police, but we our policy is not to do that.
Well,
which is a kind of all these editorial ideas need to be closely traced by everybody participating in the debate.
Well, I mean, what it all sort of coalesces on is the fabulous degree of hypocrisy among the Western press. Again, in Greenwald's article, he points out that we don't actually believe in free speech. Not only do we not actually believe in absolute free speech, but we don't do anything to people who curtail free speech in unfair ways. For example, he gives some examples. Terence McNally, a playwright, wrote a play in which Jesus was portrayed as a gay man. They received so many bomb threats and death threats that theaters stopped putting it on. That worked. The Dixie Chicks, remember the country music band?
Yes.
They got death threats for actually not anything religious, but they were condemning.
They said we're ashamed of being from Texas.
That's right. That's right. They got death
that'll
threats.
Get you shot. Will definitely get you shot in Texas.
The Israeli newspaper Haaretz.
Even the American Sniper got shot there in Texas.
A columnist for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. which after all you can't describe as being radical anti-Zionist or anything like that, but some on Facebook, they've been subjected to death threats. People have been writing that on Facebook, we hope that the journalists in Haaretz meet the same fate as the Charlie Hebdo journalists. What's more, there's more famous one. Stephen Salater, the professor at University of Illinois, was fired from his job for writing a tweet critical of Israel's attack on Gaza. Chris Hedges, a well-known intellect and thinker, had his invitation to the University of Pennsylvania turned abrogated because
Professor Finkelstein. Where was he? Was it Rutgers that they fired him, or they curtailed his contract? By the way, this anybody familiar with any of the great issues, struggles, even like we just had the freedom of the Cuban Five, a lot of pro Fidel professors lost their positions because they tried to defend the Cuban Revolution across the United States, and there was a purge. They're hunted down. Matter of fact, we even have a couple of organizations dedicated to hunting people down. I don't know, Phil or Dave, did you see the New Yorker piece? A very nicely wrought item. One of the details the author brought out there was he said, one of the favorite phrases that we've all learned to say is, I do not agree with your ideas, but I'll fight to the death for your right to hold them. You know, this is, and then Voltaire. And then he says, well, Voltaire actually never said that. The biographer of him said it, and he said, now is a good time to tell everybody. He never said it. That was a biographer in 1905. You'd think by now all that would be cleared up. But the other detail he mentioned is, he says, actually, it's also a good time to remind everybody that Voltaire was a serious anti-Semite, not playing around anti-Semite, serious. And he says, so, you know, this, you would not publish him. The things he wrote, offensive to Jews, would not be published because, he had a racial theory about which is curious because if you read it, it's the same kind of thing that happens amongst intellectuals when you have a colonized people. It's just decided that their religion obviously is a joke and that they're not capable of scientific work, which is one of the things Voltaire actually believed. Thank goodness for the New Yorker for taking it up. But he said that. He said people should not be saying, je suis Charlie. But instead, they should say, tell what they stand for, but don't claim to be something. So you have to join that because you believe in freedom of speech or because you object to the murder of people. Of course you object. And I guess this is a good time to mention there's a hero here that is not being played up, and that is Ahmed Merakat. He's a French policeman, the first one on the scene, shot dead by the terrorists. And his brother said, well, he believed in liberty, equality, and fraternity. He was proud to be Algerian. He was proud to be French. He died fighting for your right to make cartoons about his prophet.
But, yeah.
And you can find that on the net. I really recommend you go there. That brother's statement was very helpful.
Well, there's another different kind of hero. There's the man who saved the lives of the customers in the Jewish kosher supermarket.
Could you tell us about him? I don't know about that story.
Yeah. His name, he's a Muslim man. His name is Lassana Batili. He led the customers into the store's basement freezer, told them to stay while he sneaked out to help the police. Yeah. And he saved the lives of the people who were in that freezer.
Yeah. Well,
so,
there you go. Yes, the French reacted against criminals. And this division of them that people want to play should not be permitted. And now, Phil, I know you have a point that we really want to make as well. This loss of life, which I think it altogether is it 16, 20 people? 40, I don't know the
17 is the latest number I heard in all the incidents rolled together.
It's a generalization, not clearly stated, it has been made, well, this is the worst thing since World War II.
That's right.
And you objected to that.
Yes. Well, when I picked up the Global Mail on, I think it was Friday morning, Mark McKinnon and Margaret Wendt both used the formulation, the biggest attack in France since World War II. And I thought, well, that's not right, because there is this incident that happened in France, in Paris, in 1961, which was basically a police riot against the community of Frenchmen who also happened to be Algerians. And that was a bloody pogrom that went on for days. But on the key date, which is October 17th, the French government now admits 40 people.
How did it start? What the heck happened?
Well, the war of liberation in Algeria had its supporters in France. These were Algerians who lived there, and the French left. Because, by the way, there's a second slaughter a few weeks after that one, which where more people are killed by the police. Mm-hmm. One of the tactics being used by the Algerians in Paris was they were attacking the police and they had killed some police. And part of the historical reading I've been doing reminds us that an awful lot of those French police had been police under Vichy France. That is to say, they were people who had collaborated with the Nazis. This is only 15 years after the end of the war. Mm. A lot of these police still had those sympathies and had that history. And ultimately, the man who was the police commissioner at the time, Mr. Papon, many, many years later went to jail, not for what he did in 1961, but what he did in 1944 and 45. Yes. And but what happened on that day is that
he, for the Vichy, rounded up Jews to be sent to death camps.
That's right. And he was the police commissioner. And he actually,
in 1961, he was the police commissioner who attacked the Algerians.
That's right. And he actually ended up even in a higher position later on in one of the governments of one of the right-wing governments in France. He gave a speech. Which he said that you will be protected. For every one of us, there will be 10 of them, which everybody listening to this speech knew what he was saying. And then there was this police riot. The citizens, and because that's who they were under French law, the citizens, mainly but not entirely of Algerian origin, who tried to have a demonstration on that date of October 17th in defiance of a curfew with metro stations shut down and squads of police all over the city. Nonetheless, many people broke through and gathered and had a demonstration, and then the police riot happened. It involved people being grabbed by the police, beaten, unconscious, stripped of their wallet, of course, because, I mean, why not do a total job, and thrown over the bridge into the Seine where they drowned, right? And because
total of roughly how many? How many died?
Well, the historians believe as many as 200, but at least as 130. But interestingly, they only have 40 names because people just disappeared. And were never seen, but corpses were still washing up downriver a week later, and
they were sending a message.
They were sending a message. Yes. It was an incredibly violent thing. So I contacted the Global Mail and I said, "Yeah, listen, I agree, this is a horrible thing." And I wrote to Mark McKinnon. I didn't bother with Margaret Wendt because who would talk to her? I mean, it's pointless. And I said, "But hyperbole."
Don't be hating.
Hyperbole is don't overemphasize it. 12 people is horrible what happened, but this is so much bigger. And of course, the Globe's public editor was a very nice person, by the way. She responded very nicely and said, "Well, you know, really, what you're talking about is state violence, which is different from an attack." And ultimately,
I would give her that, but why don't they then parenthetically mention that somebody might recall that 130 minimum. Right. Were killed and no one punished for that.
Right. And by the way, I do want to mention that there's a follow-up event to October 17th. The police weren't finished yet. So in February, the Communist Party in France, which still in 1962 had a lot of ability to put people on the street, organized a demonstration at a metro station in solidarity with the Algerians. And 10 people, all of whom were party members, and all of whom were working class people, by the way. These were not like – Sartre wasn't there that day. You know, these were like machinists and factory workers, secretaries, men and women alike. And I looked at the names of the victims of the day. A real cultural cross mix of the French population were, again, shot by the police. And again, nobody was ever
– 10 were killed?
10 were killed, which is roughly about the same
amount.
Right. Yeah. So that's modern history in Paris, right? Yes. That's not ancient history. That's modern history.
Well, by the way, also in recent years have been prosecuted for hate, for there's the man in the theater, the anti-Semitic comedian from the African who is that's the allegation against him. A former editor of Hebdo was told by them he should apologize for making a joke about Sarkozy's son, which they, by the way, they published and thought it was funny. But then when the reaction came from some leading figures in the Jewish community of Paris, they said, then they turned to him and said, you have to apologize. And he said, I'm not going to apologize. So then he was fired. Then he was charged. So, yes, we do prosecute. In every society, by the way, and I mean, I'm talking better ones, less ones, but there are laws, and some of those laws are terrible and ought to be taken off the books. Some of them make sense because keeping social peace, not permitting violence, and particularly when you have a possibility of an outbreak of violence, which, by the way, France is experiencing this. They are waging and cooperating in a war in Syria. And which is a factor here. I am surprised that they didn't have the courage and integrity to have invited the president of Syria, President Assad, because he is fighting these terrorists. These people were in his country, having left France, coming into Syria, and were fighting for ISIS, killing Syrians. And if you want to go and see horrible photos, there's endless pictures of these people cutting the heads off Syrians.
Well, actually
and by one last point before David joins, please. I just want to say that Assad was asked by Paris Match, do you have a message you want to send to the president of France? He said, yes. Tell him I believe in liberty, equality, fraternity. What does he believe in? We should have a united front. If we're serious about fighting ISIS-style jihadist terrorists, then you have to make a common front with Syria because they're on the front line. And their journalists have been killed. Their civilians have been killed. Their Christians have been killed. And the world looks by, and Mr. Hollande and Mr. Obama say, oh, we are going to continue to give arms and money to the jihadis through Saudi Arabia, who they cut off heads. And they don't allow any free speech at all. And by the way, the sheikhs of the Gulf were at the march on Sunday. They were there. I saw they're in the picture. I think they would be there for irony because they don't believe in any of this.
And one of the articles, and I'm sure David has seen it, there was somebody who sent out tweets of – he said there were 22 governments represented in that march where we can name journalists who are in jail for doing journalism.
For all those countries. I'm sure every single one.
Well, Israel itself has laws against offending religious sensibilities, which they have action on. And just following up from some of the points I made, as I understand it, President Assad of Syria has condemned those bombings, the shootings, as has, frankly, Hezbollah. I mean, President Netanyahu of Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, tried to lump together Hezbollah and ISIS and so on. But Hezbollah came out and said that the people who killed the cartoonists were more damaging to Islam than the cartoons.
Yes.
But it doesn't get a lot of traction. But
no, we should underline it. That is, it's for our listeners to know. The leader of Hezbollah said these guys are worse than any cartoonists, and that they are associated with ISIS, that the world should condemn them.
Yeah.
You know, when people say things like that, that's the time to reach out your hand to unity and to say, you see, we could resolve, let's agree on some things. Everything issued doesn't have to be the basis of disagreement. If you can agree, agree.
Mr. Netanyahu himself has a rather thin skin. There was some cartoon published in the London Times in 2013 showing him building a wall with the blood and bodies of Palestinians. That was condemned as anti-Semitic. It got an apology from Rupert Murdoch. Tony Blair condemned it. It was a subject of a lot of hand wringing. But yeah. Let me just go on to another point, if you don't mind. We're going by the point of hypocrisy about how racist and odious attacks on Muslims are treated differently from racist and odious attacks on other people, but also that the people who carry out violence in the name of Islam are also treated differently. And there's a rather wonderful article on the web by, I think it's by Tom Hartman or under his blog. That's Tom Hartman, HARTMANN.
You see him on RT.
You see him on RT. But he points out, and this is following up from Phil Conlon's point earlier, that the New York Times ran a piece where they interviewed a former deputy director of the CIA, Michael Morell, who said that the storming of the Charlie Hebdo headquarters was, quote, the worst terrorist attack in Europe since the attacks in London in July 2005. Remember when there was those horrible bombings in the London Underground. But he seemed to have forgotten Anders Breivik, the Norwegian fascist who killed 77, mostly children, adolescents.
Young socialists.
At a young socialist summer camp on an island near Oslo. That is unmentioned. 77 children. You'd think that would be a pretty terrible terrorist attack and worth talking about. By the way, the name of Tom Hartman's article is Let's Call All Terrorists Terrorists.
Exactly.
We're talking about, you know, the terrorist attacks in Wisconsin and so on. But he says they don't call them terrorists. They call them mass shooters.
Yes.
And just to finish that point, if you don't mind, there's a very good article by a very good organization, I think, called FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, called Some European Bloodbaths Are More Interesting Than Others by a man called Jim Norekis. So yeah. Jim Norekis, I won't bother to spell it. Some European Bloodbaths More Interesting Than Others. And again, it's about the media reaction to the Breivik massacre compared to the media reaction to Hebdo. And he points out that after the Breivik massacre, you got some news reporting of it, obviously, and you had some discussion from survivors. You didn't get the kind of a big policy philosophy discussions that you get on CNN with Christian Amanpour bringing Eric Holder on, and how do we stop Islamic terrorism and how do we do this? No one's talking about how do we stop white European fascist terrorism. Not that there's any shortage of it, you know.
Yeah. And by the way, there was a vote of the United Nations against a General Assembly vote on the issue of the glorification of Nazism and neo-Nazism. Russia voted for that. Israel voted for that. Canada, the United States voted against. And you say, what is this with you guys? It would be my question. It's a curious...
Russia, Israel, and about 160 other countries.
It was overwhelmingly...
It was overwhelming.
Condemn it.
Right.
Because
right.
Nazism is a racial ideology. Its core, it is the concept of a superior people. And in a world of humanity, that is... impossible.
The Prime Minister of Ukraine visited Germany the other day and gave a speech and talked about World War II and Nazis.
Even the Germans were astonished.
Well, because actually, if a German citizen gave that speech, he might be prosecuted.
Yeah, that's what he said.
But he said it. But he and no reaction. I mean, the Americans don't talk.
Well, actually,
about it.
A couple of Americans pointed out. They said they understand him to mean not 1941, but 1944. And they said, we should probably tell him we invaded too. And if, by the way, you're asking us for money. So if you didn't know it, the United States and Britain did invade Germany in 1944, and we're quite proud of it. And so he put himself in a curious position. But, of course, that seems to be his profile. Let's keep all these things in mind if you want to cite other articles. But I just want to mention this one. The absence of the United States, in my opinion, was not a mistake. It was policy. Something is amiss when the President of the United States doesn't attend such a thing. These were heads of state. It's an insult to France that you would send your ambassador when the Prime Minister of Britain is there and the Prime Minister of Germany The president of Poland was there, and Mr. Poroshenko from Ukraine was there. All the Netanyahu. So where is the Americans, and where were the Canadians, and why not? And I'd have to say shorthand, there's some problems been emerging lately with the U.S. pressing for an attack, more aggressive NATO position on Russia. I noticed that Mr. Lavrov was welcomed, and Lavrov was there. So they didn't send his peer, which would have been Mr. Kerry, because then Kerry and Lavrov would have been standing as equals with the president of France. So they chose not to be there. Instead, Mr. Kerry is going to go on his lonesome Thursday to remind France who the leader of the free world is and to tell them that if they're going to be a poodle, they don't, you know, have to be a French poodle. But that I think there's a problem. Also, on the question recently, only what, 2 weeks ago, there was a vote at the United Nations at the Security Council on recognition of a Palestinian state, and France voted for it. The United States, I think, voted no, and I think Britain was probably abstained. That was a serious moment. A shoe dropped when France did that. And so I think all these things are I would raise those two possibilities. One, the welcoming of Lavrov and that's, by the way, high level. He's a foreign minister, and so he does belong there. But there's an angry Arab, by the way, today pointed out a really funny one. He said, if you notice the photograph, and this is going to be a photograph that's going to be with us a long, long time. There is Olan in the middle. On his right, holding his right arm, is an African leader. They rarely, by the way, when they tell us who that is, that's the president of Mali. And then to the president of Mali's right, on his arm, is Netanyahu. And then on the left of Hollande is, of course, president of Germany, prime minister. And then to her left is Abbas. Now, what's interesting in that picture, according to Angry Arab, is the president of Mali does not recognize Israel. So Netanyahu is arm in arm with a country that does not recognize him. And why? Because of this issue of the Palestinian recognition of the two states. And so I find that a very helpful one. The other detail Angry Arab points out, and he's got a lovely site as a University of California professor, very qualified gentleman, by the way. We're talking that label, Angry Arab, you don't be confused. This is a PhD, he knows what he's doing. And he says he was noting the New York Times called the attacks on the mosques. There have been three or four now in France. Grenades have been thrown, all kinds of stuff. And he said the New York Times called that in reaction to the business. They use it as an understandable term. In other words, it's reaction. He said, but of course, it's a criminal act. It's not appropriate. And if you give it a justification that they were taking revenge, there is no revenge to be taken. Those people didn't commit a crime. They're just Muslims living in France. We need that kind of as Otis told us at the beginning of the program, he was told by James Foreman, wasn't it? Be sure you read the New York Times critically. Of course, David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer, is our guest. He's an authority on international law, and of course, he follows all these things very closely. Do you want to reprise or point out particular pieces? I mentioned New Yorker, but I'm afraid I don't know the name of the author or anything like that. Did you read his piece?
That's the one piece I must say I don't have. Yeah.
At Mondo Weiss, you can get the essay by Mr. Klug.
Yes. If you Google Brian Klug, if you speak French, there's an article on a website called Article 11, or I guess Article 11, by a writer called Olivier Cyran, C-Y-R-A-N, mm-hmm. called, my rough English translation is, Charlie Hebdo isn't racist. That's what you say. And he wrote that a year or two ago. He was a journalist there and came to the conclusion that they were actually racist. So that's worth reading, but it's all in French if you read French. There's just a tremendous amount of good stuff. I mean, I do recommend the article by Jacob Canfield where he shows you all the cartoons there.
Robert Fisk has written a piece that many people are remarking on.
right.
As well.
There was an interesting piece by a man called Jeet Heer in the Globe and Mail on the weekend as well, and he tends to write well.
Yeah. Our press, by the way, I think we have to ask them, are you going to explain to us why Canada was underrepresented, embarrassingly underrepresented at the event? You know, the Toronto Star today carefully did not have a picture of those people. Now, that happened yesterday. There is no picture in a Toronto Star of that set because any Canadian, French or English native, looking would say, and where is our guy? And, well, our guy wasn't there. And I think for the very reasons I mentioned before, there is a little wobbling going on apropos of this matter. And that's why they didn't appear. And I have another question. And two of you can pitch in. We have about a minute, I think. We have an RCMP chief who tells us that we're not allowed to see the video of our terrorist who made some sort of he recorded himself before he made his attack. Now, the people of France are looking at the video made by the terrorist in France. Why are we not permitted to see what this person said? Where is the transparency? And why don't we have a democratic population that says, just give me the evidence. I don't need a policeman to tell me whether I should look at it. Isn't that censorship?
Well, of course it's censorship.
I think it goes back to the beginning. People who believe that we live in an absolute free speech, anything
should
be
ask
said.
The RCMP.
What's that?
They should ask the RCMP. Do
they
I?
Should ask.
Sir?
That's right.
May I look at that? No. And he's... his statement was for the oldest lie in the world, national security, right? I mean, for it might be some secret message. Well, you know, the British have seen these things. Even the Americans, whenever these characters now carry these things out, it's decided rather than the state holding it back, they share it with the people. They can. Everybody's free to interpret it as they like, but let's see what was said. And the leader of the NDP, Mr. Mulcair, got in trouble for suggesting we should all see that. I haven't heard him re-raise the issue. But if we're all for free speech, then let us do that. David Jacobs, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Great seeing you. That was wonderful information. And Phil Conlon, and of course, Aldous Richmond. And this is Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.
Want to learn French? Parlez-vous français? Join us every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CIET 89.5 FM or live from our studio. Potpourri Show targets student listeners who want to explore and travel through the Francophone world. Our show includes French lessons, news, reports from across the continent every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CIET 89.5 FM. Our email address, pot.purri@sympatico.ca.
Did you know there are now 8 different ways in which you can listen to your favorite programs on CIUT? From Barrie to Buffalo, Kitchener to Coburg, you can pick us up on 89.5 FM. We also stream online at www.ciut.fm, on Rogers Digital Cable, Channel 946, Channel 970 on Bell 5 TV, Star Choice Satellite offers CIUT on Channel 826, and you can pick us up on the TuneIn Radio app and under College and Campus Radio on iTunes. Finally, you can listen or download CIUT program archives at ciut.fm. CIUT 89.5 FM, delivering the new sound of your city everywhere.